For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford, and sitting in the studio with me are two cavemen. One I kind of recognize. This is Mark Tuttle's over here. He and him I recognize, but sitting across from me, there's a face that's kind of familiar.
It's sort of.
There's a voice that's kind of familiar, and I think I know this guy.
Been a while.
But, you know, memory's not what it used to be.
Right.
Would you mind introducing yourself, sir?
Sure. My name is, hang on. I know it.
It's written on your phone. Tim O'Donnell.
Tim O'Donnell. I'm Tim O'Donnell in the Catholic Cave.
I think, yeah. Now that I see your face, I'm beginning to remember you from a while ago. And I'm beginning to remember, too, that we've got a radio show that we do periodically on something that we call the Catholic
Radio Indy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's coming back. Yeah.
It's all coming back. And it's been a while. It's been a while since we've all been together in the cave. And that really does kind of lead into the topic of our conversation for today. And that is memory.
Yes.
The important memory. You know, when we think about how our minds work, we think about how our brains work. There's lots of different components to it. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got our intellect. We've got the ability to understand universal concepts. We've got the ability to kind of see particular things. We've got our imagination, which, you know, that's fascinating and kind of mysterious in itself. And then we've got memory. And, you know, memory, we don't think a lot about it, but it's always there. It's always in the background. And it's so important. St. Augustine identified memory pretty much as the seat of our identity.
In other words,
to a certain extent, you are your memory. You are the composite of all your experiences, everything that's happened to you. That's what makes up who you are.
Well, then I think it's time we bring on an expert on the subject, Dr. Kevin Vost, and he'll be joining us, if I remember how to bring him onto the phone lines,
right
after this break. We'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave in just a couple minutes.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
You're invited to join us for coffee and donuts this weekend. Well, not real coffee and donuts, but coffee and donuts with John and Mary. Great new show you'll hear right here on Catholic Radio Indy every Saturday and Sunday morning at 9:30. A lighthearted look at Catholic talk and topics. Join us for coffee and donuts with John and Mary weekends at 9 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave, and it is my pleasure once again to welcome a great friend of the Cave, Dr. Kevin Vost. Those of you who listen to the show know that Kevin Vost has been on several times because he is a fantastic Catholic author and speaker and radio host himself, has written many, many books, and we have the pleasure of picking his brain, if you will, a little bit on something that pertains to the brain, which is memorization. So, Dr. Vost, welcome back to the Catholic Cave.
It is my pleasure to be back with you guys.
Fantastic. So one of the, you've written widely, and one of the things that I think is top of mind for us today would be to explore a little bit about some techniques that you've developed around memorization. I know you've got books on how to memorize articles of the faith. You've got a book on memorizing the Latin Mass and several others. So tell us a little bit about memorization, how you got involved or interested in it.
Sure. When I tell the story, I say that I start by saying this was the most profitable quarter I ever spent. In the late 1970s, our local Lincoln Library, I'm in Springfield, Illinois, so everything's Lincoln, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Abraham Lincoln. But they had their annual book sale. And, you know, books people donated and books that they discarded. So one book that was discarded was written in 1957, and it was called Your Memory, Speedway to Success in Earning, Learning, and Living by O.W. Bill Hayes. I thought, well, that looks interesting. So I spent a quarter, picked up this little book, and it was full of these practical memory techniques using visual images in a series of imagined locations, and I was amazed how well this worked for me. So I used these memory techniques as I went through school. Anytime I had to memorize anything for a test, it was a breeze. I did this all through obtaining my doctorate in clinical psychology and taking the national licensing exam. And in the meanwhile, I found them so intriguing, I did my master's thesis on them. Mm. The thesis was called Memory Strategy Instruction in the Internalization of Higher Psychological Processes in Adolescence. And I think the fact I can remember that title from 1990 is further proof that they work.
Yes.
If I got that right. But anyway, in that text, I looked at the actual scientific research out there in psychology and educational journals, like how do students do when you teach them these specific techniques to learn things like vocabulary or foreign language vocabulary or facts of geography or biology and so forth. And they tend to be very, very effective. You know, myself, I ended up getting a doctorate in clinical psychology. My doctoral internship and dissertation were done in a memory clinic at a medical school.
Oh, wow.
So I had a lot of chance to work with people who were losing their memory capacities through things like Alzheimer's disease or other dementias or brain injuries. And I also had a chance to work with a few patients with specific kinds of brain damage with these special techniques and had some interesting results with a few. To make a long story short, I was raised Catholic. I became an atheist in my late teens, returned to the church in my early 40s, primarily through reading the magnificent works of St. Thomas Aquinas. Mm. And when I came back to the church in 2004, I recalled that as I studied these memory techniques and their history, that Thomas Aquinas and his teacher, St. Albert the Great, actually played important roles. So soon after I came back, the idea came to me that I've rarely ever seen this mentioned in Catholic books. I thought, well, maybe there's a role for that. Maybe people should know what these two great saints and doctors taught us about memory so we can apply it to whatever memory tasks are important to us.
Now, you know, memory, I think we all sort of assume we know what memory is, and it, you know, plays an important role within our mental processes, far beyond just being able to recall, you know, vocabulary words or Latin grammar or those kinds of things. So, Dr. Vost, can you go into a little bit about what exactly the memory is and what kind of role within our mental processes it plays?
Sure, that's a great question. And St. Albert and Thomas talked about this extensively because, you know, they said that animals have some form of memory. You know, they can retain, you know, learning across time like we do. But we're the only creature on Earth, of course, with rational capacities. We're the only creature on Earth where our thinking, our intellectual abilities can kind of reach down and alter and shape the way we remember things. So there's certain strategies and techniques we can use to help us remember the things that are most important, specific methods we can apply on purpose. So it's not the idea that, you know, some people think, oh, I've got a bad memory, I've got a good memory. Well, sure, there's a bell curve. We all have, you know, some of us have better memories than others. But virtually anyone can improve their memory. It's not a fixed trait. If you learn techniques, it can make a vast difference. There have even been studies that have compared people who have almost photographic memories, you know, people with very powerful natural memories, and they've pitted them against trained memory experts, people who have trained their memories on these techniques for years. And almost without fail, the trained people win over those with naturally powerful memories. So it's kind of a positive thing to think. If we want to improve our ability to remember important things, things of the faith, things relevant to our job, whatever it might be, there are techniques that are out there, and even our great saints, St. Albert the Great and St. Thomas Aquinas, have specifically written about them and recommended some to us.
And I know you've written books on several books on St. Thomas Aquinas, but also St. Albert the Great. What is it that they said about memorization that sort of captured your imagination and found it to be so helpful and important?
Sure. They did two main things. You know, they're writing in the 13th century. There was a body of literature from the classical Greece and beyond on how memory works, and it came mostly from Aristotle. You know, they read, they commented, and thought about all of that. There was a separate line of knowledge on these memory improvement techniques that were traced back to Cicero, before him to the Greek Simonides. And one thing they did, they kind of integrated these. They showed how these memory techniques, why they work based on the way memory functions. So this is great work of synthesis. Another thing they did, these techniques were originally discovered by and used by like public speakers. They would use these systems so they could give their talks from memory. Now, I do it myself. I don't memorize a talk word for word, but I have a series, maybe even 30 or 40 particular points I want to make that I can lay out in exact order with these methods and then give talks without notes. So, well, Albert and Thomas were aware of that, but they also moved these memory techniques from the realm of rhetoric or public speaking to that of virtue. They said that memory was a fundamental part of the virtue of prudence or practical wisdom. As St. Albert said, you know, when we act prudently, we achieve virtuous goals in the future by acting in the present, guided by what we've learned in the past. And so he even said that a trained memory is the most important part of prudence or practical wisdom because it shows that we have taken the time and the trouble to learn the lessons that are most important to use in actually guiding the choices in our life.
You know, in today's day and age, when we go about tasks, which is, you know, what prudence is, that's what prudence is for, is, you know, how do I take all the steps that I need to get to the goal that I've laid out for myself? The first thing we usually do is whip out the phone. And, you know, we
the smartphone.
Exactly. And
which is a lot smarter than me.
And so it's, well, right. And because it's remembering everything for you. It's got all the important dates in your calendar. It's got all the notes that you took. It's got everything there. I guess two questions. First, how is the digital age affecting memory? And then the second question is memory really that much superior to being able to remember everything with a computer or a phone or some sort of mechanical memory device, which is pretty much what all our electronics really are?
Yes, yes, and it's interesting. The similar questions were asked back in the days of Plato and Socrates, even before that, by the Egyptians at the time of the discovery of writing itself. Some people were afraid, we're going to lose our memory capacities now that we can write things down. But look how we've advanced in these few thousand years where now, as you said, we have all these digital devices. And it's not, of course, to bash them all out. I love them myself and make great use of them. But yes, an overdependence on digital sources of information can really erode our abilities to remember because we think that we just don't have to. But one scenario I described to kind of get at the gist of this, because I do often hear people saying, well, we don't need to remember things anymore because we have all this information in our fingertips. So I say, okay, imagine you need some kind of a surgery. Who do you want working on you? The world's greatest IT expert with the world's most powerful cell phone in his hand, surrounded by a room of the world's most powerful supercomputers, who can have, you know, virtually all the world's history of medical knowledge at his fingertips. Do you like him to work on, you know, do your operation, or your typical average surgeon from the local hospital, you know? Chances are I would go with that surgeon, even though he may have just a fraction of the surgical information available to him. The information he does have is internalized. It's in his own head. It's even in his own hands. So, if I had a computer issue, I would go to the computer man for the exact opposite reason. So I think the point is that it is very valuable to develop our own knowledge base because it can make a huge difference when you know something inside your own head as opposed to having just access in your hand. The bigger your knowledge base, too, the more new things you encounter in the world, the greater is your opportunity to have like aha experiences, to make connections. Oh, yeah, that relates to something I already know. You know, so you keep building this richness that you wouldn't have if you wouldn't have taken the trouble to try to build your own knowledge base. And, of course, we can't know everything, but the knowledge base in the things that are most important to you in your professional and personal and spiritual life.
Are there different – it made me think, Dr. Vost, so I'm thinking of education, right, as we, from childhood into young adulthood into adults. Are there different ways of building, say, curriculum that lends itself more towards this internalization of knowledge and information? And I'm thinking of, like, eventually, like, say, great, you know, the great books programs or things like that whose goals tend to be creating and this sort of internal, this internalized knowledge across a broad spectrum of knowledge so that one can synthesize it. So there are there things that lend itself more towards these techniques of memorization or improving our memory or internalizing this information?
Yeah, I think just as a general strategy for a broad knowledge base, I think things like the Great Book programs are extremely important, especially in our day when so many people are drawn into novelties or what they think are new ideas or new approaches without any awareness that maybe the same thing was thought and tried thousands of years ago and found wanting, you know. It gives such a rich base if we know the history of the world, history of ideas there, that then when new things come up, yeah, we have this base from which to judge them and critique them. We do hear a lot about critical thinking skills for kids, which I say I think are good, but you have to know something worth critically thinking about. You also have to have
good point.
A factual knowledge base. You know? Yeah, yeah, because I think sometimes we definitely go too far in that other direction. Also, I should say, too, as far as these memory techniques, you know, you brought up a great and important thing about the big picture, a broad curriculum that would show the value of actually knowing things, extremely important. Now, these particular memory techniques I usually write about from St. Albert and Thomas are also very specifically use visual imagery. I often in my memory books show drawings of a house. Mm. So you take these abstract ideas and place them like at a front door of a house, at a doormat when you step in, and they're all numbered. So you go through these locations and even abstract principles, they allow you to lock them in their exact order by using simple images. To give you one example, the first book I did on these techniques, Memorize the Faith, the very first topic I chose was the Ten Commandments. So, and you imagine yourself going through this little foyer, and I won't give you all ten for time constraint, but just for example, when you reach the fourth spot in this foyer, it's a portrait on the wall. And I have you imagine you're in my house. But who's up on the wall? It's a portrait of your own parents. You're thinking, what's Kevin doing with my parents in his house? But there they are, right at the fourth location.
Right.
And then just one more. The fifth location on the side of the wall, this foyer, you see this gun rack. Kind of odd having a gun rack in a foyer. But there it is, a gun rack with a very large padlock on it. So, you know, you go through all these like that, but what are we doing here? That fourth location that has your parents is because the fourth commandment is to honor your father and your mother. The fifth location has that gun rack with a padlock on it because the fifth commandment is, you know, thou shalt not kill. So for virtually any kind of information, abstract information, the commandments, principles, whatever, we can convert them into simple images that we can remember. And then we can arrange them in an ordered sequence that locks them in exactly where they belong.
Well, that's fascinating. So it's got me thinking. Do you build sort of like this image in your mind of like a house, like you're saying, filled with all these different objects that serve as sort of placeholder reminders of the pointing towards the actual principles or content that you're trying to memorize?
That's right. Thomas specifically recommends this, that you set up an ordering system of locations and you use these images. But just to make this clear, like the foyer I have in this house has 10 locations, you know, to house the Ten Commandments. Once you learn the locations themselves, like that there's a portrait on the wall at number 4, there's a gun rack at number 5, then you can reload that. It's like a notebook. You can reload them with all kinds of new information. You know, if you're going shopping tomorrow and your wife says you need some, the fourth thing you need, you know, on a series list is bananas, and the fifth thing you need is coconuts, you know. You can imagine a picture of a giant banana, you know, up in that portrait, that fourth location, and a bunch of coconuts falling out of the gun rack, you know. You can reload it with anything.
Yeah.
In fact, when I give talks, this is the system I use. Memorize the Faith, we constructed a 60-item house. It's 6 rooms. They all have between 7 and 20, I think, locations. So if I'm going to give a brand new talk, I'll lay out an outline and say, here's 30 or 40 key points I want to hit on. And I'll put the first one at the front door, the second one at the doormat, the third one at this glass panel looking out in the front yard, the fourth one on the portrait on the wall, you know. So I can do that indefinitely throughout the years with brand new material because it all hangs together. And once I've, you know, repeated it a few times and have it locked in, I could literally give my talk backwards if I wanted to, you know, from the last point working back towards the intro.
That's fascinating. What's been your personal experience, Dr. Vost, with, how has, you know, memorizing, say, articles of the faith or elements of the Mass, How does that affect your experience of, say, the Mass?
Yeah, you know, for me, it just gives a much greater appreciation to have it kind of in context, not just like, it's not just like a series of events rolling randomly. It kind of gives you like that view from above where you can see the harmony, you can see how things relate when you better grasp the structure. So I really enjoy that. I think another advantage when you apply it to spiritual material is that when, if you have any free time and downtime, if you're not looking at your cell phone, you know, you can reflect about things. You can think back with different lists of important things you've memorized, and then try to ponder them, think more deeply about them. So there's a lot of potential uses there. And I will say, Memories of Faith came out in 2006. So throughout the years, I've had a lot of people email me and tell me what they've done with it. And it's pretty fascinating. I've had, I think, two or three people have used the methods to help them pass their bar exams for law. Mm. I know people have said it's helped them learn Latin. I remember one girl said it helped her young sister who had a learning disability, who just thought she wasn't smart, and she realized she could work this and do it. But probably the most dramatic example, well, several years ago, was a 10-year-old who called me and adapted these methods to memorize the names of all of our 265 popes at the time, which he did.
Oh, wow.
That's
impressive.
That is impressive. So
yeah, it was later picked up by a secular news station, even Rochester, New York, one time. Remember, they heard about this and had the boy and his mother on and then called me on later, and it was really a cool thing. It got a lot of interest.
So when my memory fails, which unfortunately happens a lot, especially as I'm getting a little bit older, it seems to fail more and more.
You know what we should do? We should also remind our audience who we're speaking with.
Aha, yes.
Let's probably jump in and do that.
Right,
so.
because a lot of them have probably forgotten, Tim.
Yes, they might. So we are speaking with Dr. Kevin Vose, a great, great Catholic author and speaker and a great friend of the show. And we've been talking about memorization, an area of his specialization. So go right ahead, Mark.
Yeah. No, when my memory fails, it's usually in the course of doing a mundane task. So it's not, you know, I'm giving a speech and I've got 10 points and I need to remember them all. It's more like when I'm driving to the grocery store and I kind of forget where I am or something more along those lines. So are there different types of memory to a certain extent? Is there a memory that helps us remember, you know, how we go to work every day or how we do routine types of things that we do over and over versus the type of memory that helps us remember the Ten Commandments or our Latin grammar or, you know, any of those types of things?
Yes, you are right. You know, that one term memory really applies to just dozens of different related mental capacities. So, for example, like you're talking about going through a route or something that we do, like a behavior, a motor behavior, how we ride a bike or do a certain activity, like there's motoric memory for how our body moves in certain patterns. You know, our procedural memory for how we do things step by step. There is called prospective memory, where you're trying to make sure you remember to do something in the future, you know, as opposed to a retrospective memory. There's visual memory as opposed to verbal memory. In fact, one of my most interesting cases at the medical school was taking a man who had severely damaged verbal memory because of some of his brain tissue that had to be removed on the left side of his brain, and used these visual techniques to greatly improve his memory ability by converting written verbal information into visual information. So I will say, yes, there is just all kinds of, barely touched the surface here, all kinds of different aspects and powers that are subsumed under memory. And there really are, for virtually every one of them, there are potential methods of improving them.
Now, will one method kind of cross over and improve sort of multiple areas of memory? In other words, you know, if I take the time to really study Latin and get into Latin grammar and study a bunch of vocabulary words, will that help, you know, my routine memory, my ability to remember a set of tasks that I need or a set of steps that I need to complete a particular task?
Well, I think one potential benefit there is simply kind of the first step of memory, the one that Thomas talks about. It's just attention or focus. I think that's another hazard of our digital age. You know, we're always fleeting from one link to the next, you know, from one site to the next. But I think even just disciplining ourselves to do that first step, to focus our attention like it takes to learn a Latin vocabulary, can have benefits in allowing us to focus in other areas when we purposely decide to do so. Another example of that, the key importance of focus. You know, I used to, when I would teach, I'd have maybe 30, 40 students, and the second night of class, I'd call their roll off, just sitting on the desk without a list, and like, how do you know who I am? You know? so I use these techniques, you know, I never messed up. But just like anybody else, I can meet one person, shake their hand, say hello. They walk away, and I'm like, you know, who the heck was that? because there, that key, the entrance to the funnel there is attention. And if we don't focus and concentrate at first, it may be gone forever. We can't retrieve it if it never really entered into our long-term memory through the channel of a focused attention. So just one general tip there, you know, because people often ask me, how do I remember people's names? Well, I say the first most simple thing, if you meet a new person, is remind yourself to pay attention, to actually make sure you heard their name correctly, to repeat it, you know, if possible. That's kind of a first basic step. Another tip I give people, you meet a brand new person, you want to remember their name, you know, do all that. But also associate them with someone you already know. You know, if you meet a new guy named John, you know, think of a John that you know best and imagine him having a conversation with him. Just one simple little technique.
Are there do you have different ideas or suggestions around when you're trying to commit something to memory? Is there kind of a setting or environment that's more conducive? I always think of, like, you know, quiet alone time or something. Are there just different settings that can be more helpful to lending yourself to paying attention, to concentrating, and applying these techniques?
Yeah, right. That's a very good point to make. And how to think like Aquinas, I talked a little bit about this in talking about Thomas Aquinas' virtue of studiousness. And one thing can be trying to set up our external environment to make it more conducive to study and focus. So, you know, being in a certain room where you can turn off distractions, where it's quiet, or also some people actually do well with subtle instrumental music in the background. So I usually do this myself. I love people like, you know, Anton Bruckner, a great Catholic composer, many of the other classical composers.
Dvorak. Like
music. Dvorak. Yeah, I really kind of love all the classical composers. But if you put them on, you know, just gently in the background, it kind of sets a setting, it kind of triggers you if this is the time you use for serious study and memorization. So, yeah, I think there are things that, because as a, you know, Thomas and St. Albert said that virtues are also habits. So if you want to develop the capacity to memorize things, you want to set up a habit, a habitual background and setting that allow you to do that the best. And a point I should make, too, is learning these techniques like this, at first it takes an investment of time. It's kind of like riding a bicycle. You know, you got to practice till you get it down. Mm-hmm. But once you get it down, it is sort of like riding a bicycle. Once you learn these techniques, you don't have to practice them every day. You know, if you know how to do it, when the occasion arises, then you sit down and apply these, and you'll find that they work.
Now, you keep talking about techniques, plural. You know, and you went through a little bit of the you know, the foyer in your house. How many of these techniques are there? Are you know, for somebody to really improve their memory, would they have to kind of learn, you know, two or three techniques, or would they have to learn, you know, a dozen? I mean, how many are there, and really effectively, how many different techniques do you kind of need to know to use?
Yeah, actually, I think for me, the one far most useful of all, you know, if you can only learn one, this can make all the difference in the world, is that locations. It's called the method of loci, or locations, from the Latin. And if you can learn that, you can even use your own house to set up these locations, you know, where everything is numbered. So if you put a memory image there, you know exactly what number it is. If you do that, you know, it can go a long, long way. You can use it over and over for virtually anything. If I can just mention a couple other methods, another, like I have this system based on a house. That first book I found and spent a quarter on, it used the parts of a car. It had 20 parts of a car. Like the first one was a hood ornament. Remember back when cars had hood ornaments where people kept ripping them off, you know?
Yeah, like Cadillacs.
That's right. There you go, the grand Cadillac there. Mm-hmm. Then the number two was your headlights because you got two of them. And it went on like that, you know? So, well, here's what I'll do sometimes. I remember a few years ago I gave a talk on St. Martin de Porres, great Dominican saint. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, here's my, you know, 34 points or whatever I wanted to get across. I thought, well, at point seven, here I want to kind of get through the intro and give like a mini biography of his life, but then get back to the rest of the points. So at point seven, which is the chandelier in my foyer, that's when I drive up the car and set the car there. And then I kind of, you know, drill down deep and set, you know, seven or eight points on the location of that car. I go through those, then I hop back into my foyer. I'm on number eight, the mirror, you know. So you can kind of like layer these things, even if you need to. Just two different versions of the location system. But one more I should mention, because this one I used to use when I taught college for my most graphic demonstration of the way our reasoning abilities can change the way we remember. So To make a long story short, I have the class call out a random string of 50 digits, 50 numbers. People just call out, 7, 6, 5. We'd all write them down. Once we hit 50, I was keeping track, you know, I'd say, okay, now we're going to take a couple minutes and memorize these. And everybody would groan, you know. But we'd do that. After 2 or 3 minutes, I'd say, okay, flip over your papers. We're going to see how we did. Then I'd walk over to the board and ask them to call out the digit string, you know. And maybe 10 or 11 numbers or so if we had a big class. And then there's complete silence. So I would go write the rest of that string on the board. Then I would turn away from the board and say, now I'm going to call them off to you. And I'd start saying, you know, 6, 4, 1. And they go, oh, no, Dr. Boyce, you're getting every one of them wrong. I'd say, oh, I forgot to tell you, I'm reading them backwards now. And then the last thing we did was I'd say, call out a number between 1 and 50. You know, somebody go, 36. I'd go, 4. What do you mean? I go, well, the 36 digits are 4. And it would be, and the way I was able to do that, I was combining two systems. That location system was one of them, and it took me 25 locations to do the 50 items, the 50 digits. But here's the main technique I used there. There's a simple code that transforms digits into consonant sounds, and then you can build words and images. So just real briefly, a 1 is a T or a D, a 2 is an N, a 3 is an M, a 4 is an R. So, for example, if I came across, you know, the string of 1, 4, I'm not memorizing 1, 4, I'm memorizing T-R, tire. So I picture a tire. You know, if I get 2, 2, I'm not going 2, 2, I'm going N, none, you know. So basically, the class is memorizing this meaningless string of 50 digits. I'm memorizing 25 easily pictured words, placing them in a memory system that I already know better than the back of my hand, you know. So it just shows that if you know even a couple systems like this, you can do some things that seem just almost impossible, but it's because they totally transform the task itself.
We're talking with Dr. Kevin Vost, clinical professor of psychology, on memory and how to memorize things. And I've got to say, as you're talking about this, you have to be a fantastic abstract surrealist painter as you're talking about all of these images of cars hanging from your chandeliers and tires hanging underneath the portrait of your parents.
Oh, it's funny that you say that, because I will say that the first book, Memories of Fate, well, some have it, the same illustrator, Ted Schlenderfritz, and he's done some very whimsical one. Like when we memorize the books of the Bible, he has a picture of this big bullfrog sitting on the pool table, which is the 30th location, because the 30th book, according to the listening catechism of the Old Testament, is Jeremiah. And of course, Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Right.
He was a good friend of mine.
Yeah, right. So for some of these images, we have some really nice drawings in the books that render them. So it's funny that you brought that up.
Well, it's funny that you bring up a song like that, because, you know, people, they groan at the idea of memory. They think memory is so difficult. You know, the idea of memorizing 50 digits of a number seem difficult, but anybody you talk to, there's probably 30 to 40 songs that they have the lyrics completely memorized.
Oh, yeah.
Without even trying. So how is it that there's some things, you know, little kids are like this. They'll complain that they can't remember numbers and facts, but then you ask them the batting average of their favorite baseball player, and they can give you 4 seasons worth of what their batting average was and how many home runs they hit. What is it that allows us to almost without even trying memorize certain things, and then other things it's obviously a task to memorize those things?
Yeah, and that is kind of Thomas's third point about being interested in it. It's amazing when we're interested in something how much we can learn. And sometimes I use that example myself of the boy that doesn't know his catechism facts or his state capitals. The boy, he can sure tell you every player on the St. Louis Cardinals and their nemesis players on the Chicago Cubs and all that, right? Because, yeah, he has that initial step of focus and concentration because he's interested in it. And interestingly, too, with that baseball scenario, it actually has all 4 of things that Thomas says perfects your memory. Because you need to be interested to pay attention. You need repetition. And, of course, what do they pay, like 150-some games or something in baseball each year? So you've got repetition. He says you need an ordering system. Well, in baseball, we have all the positions on the field, right? We also have a batting order. And you need visual images. You know, today kids watch the games on television, but even in the days of radio, we formed those mental images as we listened to the games. So yeah, those things that we learn on our own that we just really love and enjoy, especially like that baseball example, incorporates all these techniques, but just naturally. I think the same with music. We love it. You know, we enjoy it. it's repeated. We're going to be forming images in our head of the artist who's singing it. So, boy, it really works.
Yeah, and you know, that I think that brings up another advantage to having this capacity to memorize things, and that's the ability to reminisce, to kind of recollect and think back on the great times of our life and remember as many details about what was going on, you know, at those moments as possible. Because, you know, if your memory isn't that great, then those memories become sort of hazy and faded. Where if you've got a better memory, those images can be a lot more vivid.
Just a quick question. Is there such a thing as a difference between short-term memory and long-term memory? We hear those terms all the time, but, you know, how does one become the other?
Oh, yeah, that's a fantastic question. Now, short-term memory, you know, research done decades ago show for most people, it's about 7 items of information you can hold in your short-term memory at one time. It's actually part of the reason phone numbers have 7 digits. You know, because research has found we can usually handle that, you know, if we repeat it to ourselves.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Work on Bell Telephone in the 1950s. Yeah, some psychologists, I can't remember the psychologist's name off the top of my head right now. But yes, and they often talk about 7 plus or minus 2. The vast majority of the population could hold about 5 to 9, you know, units of information in the memory at one time, right? That's why that 50-digit demonstration is so, you know, awes people, because it so exceeds our normal capacities. Mm. But yeah, for that short-term information, though, we need to focus and concentrate and repeat and do these things to move it into our long-term memory. Well, what the exception is, like certain traumatic events almost automatically go in. You know, like they used to say, where were you when John F. Kennedy was shot, or when the Challenger exploded, or at 9-1-1. You know, there are certain events that almost automatically, they're so powerful, they jump from our short-term awareness into long-term memory. But most things, we do have to move them there. That's where the focus and the attention and the practice comes in. Now, once we move it there into long-term memory, the stores are it's almost limitless, though there may be times when it can be hard for us to draw out information that's already there. And I will say, too, it's kind of one of the defining characteristics of a dementia is they precisely lack that ability to transfer information from short-term memory into long-term memory. For example, in my own research, we had early Alzheimer's patients compared to people of the same age, elderly controls, and for just repeating digits back and forth, there was no statistically significant difference between the early Alzheimer's patients and the elderly volunteers. But it was the ability to take that information and hold it across time, like for certain word lists and things, we would test people 5 minutes or half an hour later. That's where the people with dementia would totally bottom out. They were unable to move it from short-term to long-term. So that is a fundamental distinction that has real, real implications in real life.
Yeah, I specifically ask about this because last summer I had a major physical event, made cardiac arrest, was hypoxic for probably 30 minutes. And to this day, I'm dealing with some short-term memory issues, and I'm looking at these techniques that you're talking about and thinking, I think I found what I've been looking for.
Ah, well, I hope so. You know, I have, like I said, worked with some people that have certain traumatic brain events, and they've had good results. So I hope, you know, it's usually not effective for, like, folks with a dementia because the brain structures themselves are too gone. But I would hope that it might prove very valuable for you.
So the same techniques work for both short-term and long-term memory.
The idea is that by putting things into your short-term memory, Thomas also said repetition's the mother of memory. By focusing and repeating them, that's how usually we move things along into the long-term memory. But also, remember, we kind of start with attention. If you don't pay attention, you know, if you don't repeat it and rehearse it, it's never going to get into long-term memory. So the key, kind of the way we look at it, is a step-by-step process of cognitive memory processing. Yeah, we need to pay attention to something if we want to remember it. And then, you know, sustain that focus and concentration. Repeat it. Keep it in that short-term memory longer. It's also called working memory at times. This is where we can do things like apply those techniques, rehearse it, repeat it. That's what's going to be better able to move it into long-term memory. And now also, these memory systems like this, they also form a retrieval aid. So when you know something like the layout of a house and you're trying to remember something, you know that in your long-term memory, and it helps you pull other things out. Like if you forget the 32nd item for a minute, you know, you can look back and see if you remember the 31st or the 33rd, and that whole sequence may draw you in. So just kind of amazing the way these techniques really work, affect all the different aspects of memory.
You know, and that brings up another fascinating question I've always had about memory, and that is, how does the idea of a hole in your memory actually work? In other words, you're remembering that you've forgotten something. So how does that mentally work, that you know that there should be something there that's not?
Yeah, I know we also get like the tip of the tongue phenomenon. You're looking for a word, you kind of know you almost have it, you know, but you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing I would think there, like okay, you're aware that you've forgotten something, kind of. Because I know sometimes when I give talks, people ask me about their parents. They're concerned about a dementia or something. She'll say, well, I remember one just recently. She said, you know, well, I'll plan with Mom to go do something next Wednesday. And then I show up at her door next Wednesday, and she's, well, what's going on? And she said, well, Mom, remember we were going to go out to the store today. And I said, well, what does Mom say then? I said, does she remember that you originally planned to do that? She said, oh, yeah, she knows that. But I said, it's not likely then that she has dementia. Because all of us, especially as we get older, it's easier for us to have problems retrieving things. Like, they're in there, but we're not accessing them. But when someone brings it up to us, gives us a cue, tells us about something, like, oh, yes, that's right, we did that. But if you have an actual dementia, you're not going to even remember doing it in the first place.
That takes away my excuse with my wife.
Sorry, I'm sorry about that.
I'm sorry, sweetie. I couldn't remember it because I've got dementia, and I can't play that card anymore now.
I have maybe something, Dr. Vos, related. I don't know if you know much about it, but I suspect you might. I was listening to another radio program. And what they described was, they had this gentleman on, and what he described was that when he was maybe, 16 years old or something like that, he dove into the shallow end of a pool, which we all know you're not supposed to do, and he hit his head on the bottom of the pool and caused a pretty severe brain injury. And the amazing thing about it was he was able to, once he recovered, you know, he was like knocked out and everything. But when he recovered like a day later, all of a sudden he knew how to play the piano like someone who had been playing it for 30 years and he had never played the piano before. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Actually, I only listen to this radio program.
Okay.
I've not heard stories of others, but no, seriously. That one, the sudden acquisition of a skill, I must admit, I've not.
Yeah, it was fascinating. He described it as, or he describes his experience as if in his mind he sees like a checkered pattern, and then his hands automatically move on the keyboard, and he can play not only like original thing, so a kind of innovation, but also any music that he's heard in the past, he's able to replicate. So, and they were saying was something, there's only like 30 instances of this in the whole world, and he's the only one where music is how it manifested itself following a brain injury. So,
yeah, that's ultra, totally fascinating, and it raises the possibility, again, of inherent potential skills we might all have to some extent. That aren't usually tapped into, and for some strange reason, the way the brain reacts to that unleashes in him. I find it very, very fascinating. And I will say too, in regards to music and the history of these memory techniques, there have also been techniques like this specifically designed for memorizing music. There's one that's based on like the five fingers of the hand that are used for the scales and so forth. So all kinds of adaptations. But yeah, that man's experience is just utterly fascinating, and it does show us too that just the amazingly way, God graced us with intellects and wills, the amazing potentials that we do have there in our intellectual capacity.
Dr. Vost, for those of our listeners that are wanting to learn some of these techniques, they're wanting to improve their memory, what are some resources? I mean, obviously you have your own books, but what are some, your books or other books that our listeners could turn to for learning some of these techniques?
Sure. Besides my book, one of the first I came across, not the first, was the memory book by Harry Lorraine and Jerry Lucas. It's kind of a classic. It does not use a location system, but it uses very similar visual image systems. If you're really interested in the history of these techniques, too, it's just a fascinating story in itself. There's a book called The Art of Memory by a historian, a woman, Frances Yates. She was British. I think she wrote this in the 1960s. Amazingly, she wrote that she didn't practice the techniques herself, but she wrote a wonderful history that includes the roles that St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Albert the Great, and other Catholic figures played in them. There's also a book called The Book of Memory by American English professor Mary Carruthers that gives a lot of this fascinating history, including the Catholic history, and it also includes in an appendix St. Albert the Great's line-by-line commentary on a book called the Ad Herennium, the oldest text that we have describing these memory techniques. It's from about 80 BC. For centuries, it was supposedly written by Cicero. We don't think so now. But that book, The Book of Memory by Mary Carruthers, actually has Albert going over these ancient techniques with a fine-tooth comb. It's pretty amazing stuff.
And where did St. Thomas Aquinas write about memory and memory techniques?
Well, that's a good one, too. Yeah, he wrote about it briefly compared to St. Albert, but the most specific description of the techniques is in the Summa Theologica, almost right in the middle, the second part of the second part, the 49th question, the first article, is called Whether Memory is a Part of Prudence. And here in just a page or two, he talks a little bit about the nature of memory, and he gives you these four things you need to do to perfect your memory.
Which one of your books, Dr. Vos, do you think would be a good place for someone to get started?
Well, my most thorough treatment is the original book, Memorize the Faith and Most Anything Else, Using the Methods of the Great Catholic Medieval Memory Masters by Sophia Institute Press.
Excellent. So we're really just about out of time, Dr. Vos. How would our audience kind of follow you and some of your work, and if they want to contact you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, my website's drvost.com, just drvost.com, and I do have a comment box at the bottom if anyone has questions or comments for me.
Well, great. Well, fantastic. Thank you again so much for coming into the Catholic Cave again. Really had a great time. Mark and I are going to try to memorize this show and see if we can. And you can test us next time we have you back on the program.
Yeah, very good. I doubt there were any cavemen who would ever have such powerful memories as you guys would develop.
Or furry knuckles. Again, thank you so much, Dr. Vos. God bless.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a website, CatholicRadioIndy.org, with access to great Catholic resources, including podcasts of all our local programming, podcasts that have been downloaded from all 50 states and over 40 countries on 6 continents. Yes, we are Catholic Radio Indy, but thanks to your support, we're taking the gospel of Christ to the ends of the earth. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, Mr. Mark Tuttle. We've just been talking with Dr. Kevin Vost about memory. And I've got a little bit of a story. I mean, you heard part of it when we were talking to Dr. Vost. Last summer, I had a major medical crisis. I ran into some problems where I ended up, my heart stopped, my breathing stopped. I was without oxygen for somewhere between 15 and 30 minutes. And as a result, there is some short-term memory damage, some brain damage that resulted from that. And so, you know, I'm looking at these techniques that he's talking about, but there's a funny story that goes along with this. And that's the fact that, you know, you talk about what do you remember? And, you know, quite frankly, I don't remember anything from 2 days before it happened until about the sixth day, when I remember waking up and my wife looking down at me going, "Shh, don't say anything. You've been very sick. We'll explain it later." Well, during the time I was in the hospital, they had put me into hypothermia, dropped my body temperature, and they put me into an induced coma.
Oh, wow.
And just, you know, stimulation, whatever, my niece brought in a CD of Beatles music. I'm a huge Beatles fan.
I've been
playing Beatles music for years.
Well, good stuff.
The nurses got the biggest laugh out of the fact that when certain Beatles songs were playing, I'm laying there in this induced coma, and my right foot starts to tap, and my left hand starts playing guitar chords.
Oh, wow. That's great.
I mean, you know, like I said, I have absolutely no memory of the time, but you know, everybody got a big kick out of that. So, you know, I'm glad I could be entertaining while I really wasn't there. But, you know, it's one of those things. I look back and, you know, I've got, there was that incident with apparently muscle memory or whatever that went along with that. But in addition to that, there's this hole in my memory for about 7 to 8 days. I know nothing of what happened to me then. I was there. Yes, I was there physically. I have absolutely no memories of anything during that time.
Now, are you conscious of this hole in your memory, or do you only know of this hole because other people have told you of this hole?
Basically, I'm conscious of the hole because, you know, I know that the gap is there, and I know everything that happened during that time, but I know it from a third person perspective. My wife took millions of notes. I've read every medical report I could get my hands on. Everything. I know exactly what happened when they diagnosed this, what procedure they did, how they did this, everything else. I know all that, but it's not from my experience. It's like I read a book about it.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating.
You know, so I have a memory of what happened during that time, but it's not my memory.
Right.
So, you know, it's amazing. You know, Dr. Vost was talking about, you know, how memory works and those kinds of things. And, you know, I do have some memory deficit as a result of, you know, you go 15 to 30 minutes without oxygen to the brain. And, yeah, there's going to be some damage there.
That's a very long time.
Well, they're just surprised I'm up and walking.
I bet.
I mean, they didn't think I was going to, well, first 3 days, they were telling my wife, plan the funeral. But, you know, it's just one of those situations where, you know, hand of God and a lot of good doctors got me through. But, you know, when I look back on it, there's no memories there. There's nothing. And, you know, I want to go back and I know I can't recover those memories. They never went in, so they're not there to bring back. But, you know, at the same time, I want to see what I can do about what damage has been done. And how can I, you know, how can I get past these gaps that are happening to me now? You know, my wife will tell me something on Monday. Oh, hey, Friday, we're going to do this. Friday comes around and I find myself going, we're doing what?
Yeah. You know, I think, though, that's probably just because of the Y chromosome.
Quite honestly, could well be. That could well be. You know, and if she told me during a Cubs game, forget it.
Right. Do you think, Kent, are you gonna try some of these techniques?
Oh, Dr. absolutely.
Let us know if that makes a difference for you.
I wrote down the name of his book because I'd never forget it. I'd never remember it, actually. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to pick that up and see if I can apply some of these to what I'm dealing with. You know, I talked to my doctors a couple weeks ago, and they pointed out, I guess there are some apps that you can get for your phone or your computer that will help with memory and those kinds of things. But, you know, it's a situation of, I don't want to be dependent on, you know, a phone to test my memory. I want to be able to do it outside of some electronic device. And, you know, I figure if Aristotle and Augustine and St. Thomas could do these things, you know what? I think I should be able to here in the modern world.
I always enjoy apologetics and engaging people with discussions about the faith. So I'm also going to pick up his book on memorizing the faith and try some of these techniques and see if that doesn't make me a better defender of the faith.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be applied to just about anything you're doing in your life.
Yeah. His his example of using it in public speaking, that very much intrigues me, of being able to.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great not to have notes?
Not to have notes, and not only that, but to be able to have a very detailed presentation that you remember.
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to talk and be able to kind of spontaneously speak in public and maybe cover three or four of the points that you want to talk about.
Right.
But it's another to have a detailed 30-point presentation from memory.
I mean, that's like, right.
I can't even do that with PowerPoint in front of me.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
Never could. So, but that is about all the time we have this time around for the Catholic Cave. We'd like again thank Dr. Kevin Vost for joining us, and for Timothy O'Donnell, for Mark Tuttle, I'm Kent Blanford. Until next time, may God bless.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.